She curses at them as they lock her arms together and drag us away through the webbery to the cells. This will mean the lash. But it will be just the lash, because I did not pick up the thumper. Because I did not listen to Io. It's 3 days in a cell in the pot before I see Io again. Bridge, one of the old, kinder tin pots, takes us out together. He lets us touch. I wonder if she'll spit at me, curse me for my impotence. But she only grips my fingers and brings her lips to mine. Darrow. Her lips brush my ear. The breath is warm, the lips cracked and trembling. She's frail as she hugs me, a little girl, all wire wrapped in pale skin. Her knees wobble and she shudders against me. The warmth I saw in her face as we watched the sunrise has fled and left her like a faded memory. But I hardly see anything but her eyes and her hair. I wrap my arms around her and hear the muttering of the crowded common. The faces of our kin and clan stare at us as we stand at the edge of the gallows, where they will flog us. I feel like a child under their stares, under the yellowish lights. It's like a dream when Io tells me she loves me. Her hand lingers on mine, but there's something strange to her eyes. They should only whip her, yet her words are final. Her eyes sad, but not afraid. I see her making a goodbye. A nightmare is coming into my heart. I can feel it, like a nail dragged across the bones of my spine as she murmurs an epigram in my ear. Break the chains, my love. And then I am jerked away from her by my hair. Tears stream down her face. They are for me, though I do not yet understand why. I cannot think. The world is swimming. I am drowning. Rough hands shove me to my knees, then jerk me up. I've never heard the common so quiet. The shuffling of my captor's feet echoes as they move me around. The tin pots fit me into my hell diver fry suit. Its acrid smell makes me think I'm safe. I am in control. I am not. I'm dragged away from her into the very center of the common and tossed at the edge of the gallows. The metal stairs are rusted and stained. I grip them with my hands and look to the top of the gallows. 24 of the head talks each have a cord of leather. They wait for me atop the platform. Oh, the horror of such occasions as this, my friends! Magistrate Paginus cries. His copper grav boots hum above me as he floats through the air. Oh, how the ties that bind us are stretched when one decides to break the laws which protect us all. Even the youngest, even the best, are subject to law, to order. Without these, we would be animals. Without obedience, without discipline, there would be no colonies. And those few colonies there are would be torn asunder by disorder. Man would be confined to Earth. Man would wallow forevermore on that planet until the end of days. But order, discipline, law, these are the things which empower our race. Cursed is the creature who breaks with these compacts. The speech is more eloquent than usual. Paginus is trying to impress his intelligence upon someone. I look up from the stairs and see a sight I did not ever think to see with my own two eyes. It stings to look at him, to drink in the radiance of his hair, of his sigils. I see a gold. In this drab place, he is what I imagine angels would be like. Cloaked in gold and black, wrapped in the sun, a lion roaring upon his breast. His face is older, severe, and pure with power. His hair shines, combed back against his head. Neither a smile nor a frown mark his thin lips, and the only line I see is that of a scar, which runs along his right cheekbone. I've learned from the HC that such a scar is borne only by the finest of the golds. The peerless scarred, they call them. Men and women of the ruling colour who have graduated from the Institute, where they learn the secrets that will permit mankind to one day colonise all the planets of the solar system. He does not speak to us. He speaks to another gold, one tall and thin, so thin I thought it a woman at first. Without a scar, the man's face is coated with strange paste to bring out the colour of his cheeks and cover the lines on his face. His lips shine, and his hair glistens in a way his master's does not. He is a grotesque thing to look upon. He thinks so of us. He sniffs the air, contemptuous. The older gold speaks to him softly, and not to us. And why should he speak to us? We are not worthy of a gold's words. I scarcely want to look at him. I feel like I dirty his gold and black finery with my red eyes. Shame creeps upon me. And then I realize why. His is a face I know. It is a face every man and woman of the colonies would know. Besides Octavia Auloon, this is the most famous face on Mars. That of Nero Augustus. The arch-governor of Mars has come to see me flogged, and he has brought a retinue. Two crows, obsidians to be technic, float quietly behind him. Their skull helmets suit their colour. I was born to mine the earth. They were born to kill men. More than 2 feet taller than I, 8 fingers on each massive hand, they breathe them for war, and watching them is like watching the cold-blooded pit vipers who infest our mines. Reptiles, both. There are a dozen others in his retinue, including another, slighter gold who seems his apprentice. He's even more beautiful than the arch-governor, and he appears to dislike the thin, womanish gold. And there is a HC camera crew of greens. Tiny creatures, compared with the crows. Their hair is dark. Not green, like their eyes and the sigils on their hands. Frenetic excitement shimmers in those eyes. It's not often they have helldivers to make into an example, so they make a spectacle of me. I wonder how many